Hey, gang. Welcome to the show. This is another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. I'm Patrick Slattery, and I'm here today with Don Advo. Don Advo, greetings.
Greetings, Patrick Slattery, and to all the listeners from behind the lines in Mexican-occupied California. Great to be with you today.
Well, thank you for coming on. Well, there's a lot of stuff going on. Maybe we should start off talking a little bit about Richard Spencer's event yesterday at the University of Florida. He gave a speech, or he tried to give a speech. I think mainly he debated with the audience, but things seemed to have gone relatively smoothly. There was, when I say smoothly, I mean probably as expected. It would have been nice if the crowd inside the auditorium was all there to listen, but that's not going to happen too often. There were a lot of people who wanted to listen, but a lot of people who just wanted to shout him down. But he was also with Mike Enoch, a podcast host, who's the host of the podcast, The Daily Shoah, who's a very intellectual younger man. I don't know if he's a young man, but he's younger than we are.
Right.
He was also on stage, and I think between the two of them, they were able to pretty well handle the various taunts from the audience. There is not really any violence, except because I think the police did their job, except apparently there was one person who nobody knows who showed up in a t-shirt with a swastika on it, who is photographed being punched in the face. But otherwise, it seemed to have gone off more or less as they would have expected. Did you see parts of the speech, or did you read accounts of it?
I didn't see any of the speech. I only heard accounts. I don't know what he said. But I did hear a few excerpts of it, I guess. It was difficult for him to speak because they weren't there to listen or to allow him to speak. The main thing is that he had the protection of the law. He was able to speak in a somewhat orderly manner. And compare that with Charlottesville, where the event was shut down before any speeches could be given, in complete defiance of any of our rights. And I think in an action that was in contempt of an injunction that was issued the previous day by a federal court, I think this was a victory of sorts. I think it's important that we continue to be out there. It's Richard Spencer is to be commended because he's braved violence, arrest. He's been sued civilly in actions arising out of Charlottesville in two separate actions, or at least one of them. I guess he's not a defendant in the other, in the second one, asking for an injunction against him. But he's done a great deal, and just going out there and staking a claim and asserting your First Amendment rights and demanding the protection of the law. Now, I don't I understand Virginia has a Democrat governor and Charlottesville has a Jewish Democrat mayor. Florida, by contrast, has a Republican governor, and I don't know much about the city of Gainesville. The city of Gainesville does not appear to have been involved very much at all in this event. It was the university, I guess, and they hemmed and hawed and complained that they had to spend $500,000. And I think they never complain about all the money they have to spend when blacks burn cities down and exercising their rights of protest. They seem to think that's a good thing when blacks go out and burn things down because that starts a conversation.
Well, yes, and the reason they're spending the $500,000 here isn't because Richard Spencer's going to burn things down. It is to prevent those very same blacks or Antifa to prevent them from the violence. So,
well, that's true.
Yeah,
that's
they come out and wherever Richard Spencer goes. In fact, wherever even people who aren't even really on our side, people like Ben Shapiro or Alan Dershowitz, of all people, they can engender an opposition. But certainly, Richard Spencer, this is something that he's developed this. It's in his playbook. He is going to be going from university to university, and not only universities. He's going to be, I believe he'll be at this Shelbyville event in Tennessee coming up. So it's part of his playbook.
Well, yeah, I think so. But I understand he's scheduled at some other schools as well. I'm not sure which ones they are, but there's going to be more. There's going to be more of this, more people out there. You know, it's very interesting. We look at the changes in the last year, and of course, you know, what has been the effect of our movement on the election of Trump? I know people whose judgment I respect who thinks Trump would not have been elected without the support of Anglin and the white, the so-called alt-right, which is a shorthand word for white identity politics. And how do we measure how well we really are doing? I think one way is look at the comments on the internet. Another way is the fact that we are gaining visible public support, support in Pike County, Kentucky, when Matt Heimbach and his group led a successful rally. There have been a number of events in Charlottesville where our people went in and had marches and rallies, and they got in and got out, and there was no violence. The violence always comes when we are confronted by nonviolent counter-protesters. But apart from that, there's another kind of thing. I go I Google alt-right every day, and I Google alt-right on YouTube to see what posts have come on during the previous 24 hours. And you see these kind of an endless dialogue in the mainstream media and among some of the YouTubers about the alt-right and how it is doomed to failure, how it has no influence, how it has no money, how it has no power, how it is most certainly doomed. But at the same time, they talk about the urgency and the need to shut it down because it's going to become overwhelming, and it controls the White House. It has turned upside down politics in this country. So you see this weird kind of schizophrenia among our enemies. On the one hand, we're doomed and we have no power. On the other hand, we're about to take over the country and take over the world. I think just by reason of the visibility of Richard Spencer and others in these rallies, we're gaining a lot of ground. We are gaining a great deal of ground. We are becoming very, very quickly legitimized, and calling people Nazis and racists, that isn't really going to get them very much in today's world. I mean, the left has so overplayed that word, has stretched it beyond any rational meaning. In the aftermath, that and the word fascist, I mean, how often are we called fascists and proto-fascists and neo-fascists and white fascists and whatever? George Orwell, in the aftermath of World War II, very famously wrote an essay. And he said, people who throw around the word fascist should define it or stop using it. I think that also applies to Nazi and neo-Nazi. And I think his words would be well advised today to be heeded by the people who throw these words around. A couple of things. One is the courage of the people who stand with Richard Spencer and stand in public forums with our people. The other is the cowardice and the intellectual dysfunctionalism of the people against us. They can't ask an intelligent question. They can't make an intelligent comment. They can't say anything that is so long and so complicated that it cannot be reduced to a placard, a banner, or a bumper sticker. And that says a lot. And I think normal people just watching this are cannot help but be influenced by it. And remember something, the internet has turned the media world upside down. The NFL Football League event is, you know, the controversy surrounding that. You ask yourself, what is the relationship between that and Richard Spitzer, the alt-right, and white prospects for survival. I think the relationship is quite significant. The fan base of the NFL, of the National Football League, of professional football, is overwhelmingly white. And if white people walk away from football, football will be bankrupted and out of business. This is an industry with a white fan base, and 70% of the players are black. All are millionaires. I think the average salary is about $2.5 million. Colin Kaepernick had a $14 million contract with the 49ers, and he walked out. He quit. Now he can't find a job, and he's complaining that he's the victim of oppression and unfairness and collusion. Well, what does all of the NFL being bankrupted, what does that have to do with whiteness, with white people, with white activism? If you read the comments on these NFL threads, white people are very, very quickly realizing there is a racial dimension to this controversy, to this conflict, and they're increasingly beginning to realize that when you most black power, most black financial power, economic power, political power, well, not so much political power, but financial and economic power comes from white consumer dollars. Oprah Winfrey didn't become a billionaire because black people opened their pocketbooks mm-hmm. and subsidized her. It was white women who made Oprah Winfrey a billionaire. It was white men who made O.J. Simpson a millionaire. White viewers of both genders who made Cosby a millionaire. And it is largely white males who have made these NFL players who hate us so much, have made them into millionaires. And when you close your wallet and you walk away and you defund your enemy, that is one less enemy to fight. It is one less battle to fight. And I read the comments on this, and the people, I don't know how representative it is of most fans, but the people are absolutely unwavering in their sense of betrayal and their sense of grievance, the white people, that they are never going to go back to the NFL. And they're very racially aware that this is a war of black, aggrieved black, oppressed black millionaires, and they're lashing out at white people who are living paycheck to paycheck and spending money on bread and circuses. And the economic disparity is something that white people are starting to comment about. That's a hugely important factor. They're saying, you know, what I said, we're living. One woman said, you know, my husband and I live paycheck to paycheck, and I'm sick and tired of watching peons like us hand over money and make these people billionaires. I won't let my husband watch football in the house anymore. He's going to have to watch it at his friend's house if he watches it at all. And you see other people who said, well, men said, well, I gave up football. I spend more time with my son. I spend more time with my family. I have a hobby. And people, I'm seeing increasing numbers of posts where people say, I gave up football and I'm happier. My life is better. Mm-hmm. I don't drink as much. I don't eat as much fattening food while I'm sitting on a couch, and it's good for us. So harming football is a good thing, but that will – see, media derives a lot of money from revenues derived from the viewership of football. So when white people walk away from football, not only are they defunding these awful black millionaires who hate us, they are helping – defund what is left of the mainstream media.
That's right. I mean, what is the number one watched show basically year after year? The number one TV event in any given year is bound to be the Super Bowl. And of course, we saw that maybe not this year, but the year before, the Super Bowl halftime show was just one big anti-white extravaganza. Black Lives Matter, Malcolm X, Black Panthers. And, you know, a lot of what's going on is explicitly race-based now. The Weinstein thing, really, they're going to try to make this into, oh, this is men. And even you get some clown like that fat cat lady, Michael Moore, who's come out and said, oh, this is an opportunity to end white patriarchy. But the Weinstein thing, it's a Jewish anti-white thing. You look at Weinstein's movies. I mean, his sexual exploits were anti-white, anti-Gentile predation. And if you need evidence of it, look at what his entire career has been based on, Inglourious Basterds and Django Unchained and The Hateful Eight, all of these anti-white movies, and Hollywood in general, the record industry in general. It's been anti-white and promoting alternatives to whiteness. But then you've got the NFL, as you point out, which is this is explicitly over race. They're taking their knee, disrespecting the flag explicitly over this complete myth of of police brutality against blacks. You had the Spencer event, and so what's going to be interesting. What is interesting about Spencer is he comes forward and he's talking about white interests. Don't white people have interests? And he's not a skinhead with neck tattoos. He and his entourage they're always very well dressed and polite and well behaved. And, it's good optics. And then meanwhile, in the crowd, you've got, aside from the Antifa and the Black Lives Matter people, you've got, there was a picture of a white girl from the University of Florida, and she's wearing a T-shirt saying, or holding a placard saying, white and not proud. Basically explicitly self-hating. Why shouldn't she be proud? And, it goes on. You've got an ad industry, and this is, for instance, if you're older person or you're living with an older person, you know that right now you've got this is the time when the insurance companies are sending out all of this Medicare advertisements, these brochures, and they almost all have these smiling black people. You want to sell anything, you would think that this country was 60% black, because you look at the ads and it's just blacks, and to the extent you have whites in the ad, they're marginalized. They are the wife of a black husband, or they are an uneducated consumer who's being educated by the wise black person who's sitting next to them. And so it's coming at us from all angles. Here's another. I know we're coming close to the next break, but one. We do have this congresswoman. I want to call her Congresswoman Cow Lady because she was always wearing these absurd cowgirl hats. What was her name? Wilson? Something Wilson?
Yeah, Frederica Wilson.
Yeah, and so here she is trying to be the conscience, who is pointing out the outrages of President Trump and his behavior. Of course, she's been pretty much called out in a very eloquent speech and rebuttal by General Kelly, President Trump's chief of staff. Did you catch some of his speech or his?
Well, I caught the remarks by General Kelly. The actor James Woods has referred to Frederica Wilson, she always wears these weird cowboy hats as a parasitic rodeo clown. But yes, I did hear General Kelly's remarks. I thought they were very effective, very suitable. Reflecting back on it, on this whole controversy, is there anything anybody can possibly, any white person, anything any white conservative person can possibly say to a black person that will not be construed as offensive? Blacks are almost as good as Jews in finding reasons to be offended and things by which they will be offended. So the fact that she was offended or felt disrespected,
I think we're hearing the music. I think we're coming up.
Okay.
And would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and the Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, and insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world into submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Maybe if we didn't have a Jewish-dominated music industry, that's what we would be listening to. But we were talking, you were talking about Frederica Wilson and James Wood, the actor James Wood's take on her and criticism of her.
Right. Right. He was quite critical of her. I'm sure that's not going to help his career in Hollywood very much. But
so,
he was... Very critical.
So somehow, I'm not quite sure how it happened, but I watch CNN because I get it for free. I don't know why I don't pay for it. But the blacks like Frederica Wilson have been appointed somehow as the moral conscience of our society. Martin Luther King, it's Nelson Mandela, and after Charlottesville. You barely saw a white face on CNN for the rest of the month of August. It was just nonstop blacks who were, for the most part, just being the moral conscience. Or occasionally, you might have a black who was the designated defender of Donald Trump. But it's as if white people are so morally compromised that we're not even allowed to comment on things. We have to be lectured, just like in the TV commercials. We have to be taught everything by the black next door neighbor who understands the system, understands how everything works.
Right.
So, now, normally I wouldn't really think this is such a big deal with President Trump. You know, we're talking about the responses or the phone calls that he makes to troops who have died. And of course, the number of troops who have died overseas under Donald Trump is way less than under his predecessors, because he's not engaged to the same extent and to the same aggressiveness in nation building and in Zio wars. That could change, but I guess there have been a few dozen people this year who have died. And you know, so normally I wouldn't think this was worthy of having a big discussion about. But what's interesting to me is that, well, one thing is anything Donald Trump does is just going to be questioned. And, you know, he's got his own style for sure. But calling up somebody and saying, you know, he knew what he was getting into, yet I'm sure it still hurts. He knew what he was signing up for. To say that the enlisted person knew that they were going to do something dangerous, that I don't see how you take that as an insult or in any way demeaning. If they knew what they were getting into, if they knew where they were facing danger, and they faced danger anyway, I don't see it as pointing out that the person was reckless or irresponsible. It was that the person was brave. And, you know, supposedly if you're president, you're commending their bravery and sacrifice on behalf of the country. Although, frankly, if you're in my position, you say, really, what interest do we have in Niger and what's going on in Niger? But that seems to be what's going on.
Yeah, my thoughts are the same as yours. I mean, what makes it a heroic and a brave thing is that he knew what he was getting into. He absolutely knew, and he voluntarily put himself in harm's way. I mean, it wasn't like the people on 9/11 who went to work one day and then you know, got blown to bits. It was a tragic thing, but you can't really say that going to work every day is a particularly heroic thing when you have no reasonable expectation that you're going to encounter any kind of damage or anything like that. So, you know, I don't think there was anything wrong. But, you know, what kind of person has a congresswoman eavesdropping on the line when you receive a call like that? You know, it's obviously they're going to figure out some way to monetize it.
Right. Okay, we'll be back after the break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to aroutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Back. So we will be taking callers. This is our second half of the show. I'll give out that number. It is 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. I was looking at Breitbart, just at the front page, and scrolling down, I see, you know, a couple of interesting pictures, a couple of interesting headlines. You know, they've got one where they've got Karl Rove juxtaposed to Steve Bannon, Empire Strikes Back, Rove hits Bannon in the Wall Street Journal. And then you scroll down a bit more and you see a picture of George W. Bush, who he was one of my favorite painters. Not that I thought he was particularly talented, but just because it seemed like a good outlet for his whatever energies he has, rather than. But unfortunately, he took a little bit of time off from his artistic endeavors, and he made a speech before what is it? I don't know, the American Enterprise Institute or something like that. And he's disturbed by Donald Trump and his nativism, and you know, Donald Trump is emboldening bigotry. I can't bring myself to listen to his words being spoken. It's been very pleasant the past 8.5 years. Even putting up with Obama's fake Negroisms, but W's his affected Texas drawl was just too much for me. But no, the mainstream media is marching out. Karl Rove and George W. Bush to attack Donald Trump or Trumpism, and by extension to attack white people. And it really shows what a lot of us were saying for years and years, that, you know, there's not a whole lot of difference between, say, the Bushes and the Clintons, but you could go beyond that. There's really not a whole lot of difference between the Bushes and the Clintons, the Koch brothers and the Michael Moores. They're all on board with multiculturalism, with replacement level immigration, with the promotion of Zionist interests and the submersion of white interests. What do you think of that, Don?
Well, they absolutely all are. I saw part of Bush's speech. It was ridiculous. It's almost pathetic to see this guy hauled out. I mean, that's the best they can do. I guess that's one measure of the effect of our activism, that they feel compelled to bring out this has been to try to attack us. I saw he and Bill Clinton were together on some kind of C-SPAN show, and they talked and joked and laughed. And apparently the Clintons and the Bushes are great friends. George Bush said that Bill Clinton spent more time at Kennebunkport than he did with the Bush family, the Bush parents. See, Clinton's parents are both dead. And so Bush has spoken previously of how Hillary and Bill are almost like family members. And of course, they've worked together. They've stolen together. They've done drug importing together when Clinton was governor in the state of Arkansas. But it's there's not much difference between them. I don't think there's much difference at all between a Clinton presidency and a Bush presidency, except Bush lowered taxes. That seems to be kind of a Republican default position to talk about lowering taxes, and then to actually try to do that when you have the political capital to do it. But I've heard this lowering taxes stuff my whole life, and I kind of lose consciousness when they start talking about it, because what's the point? If we're speaking Spanish, and the Republicans can't win another election because they have been utterly demographically overwhelmed by Latin Americans and other ethnicities, how long do you think those taxes are going to stay low? Not very long at all. So the whole Bush family is kind of a crime syndicate anyway, and I don't know what to say about George Bush. I think he's rather a pathetic figure. I think he's been deflated. The interesting thing to me is people who were formerly treated him like God are now coming out and turning against some of his ideas. I saw Laura Ingraham, the blonde conservative talk radio show host and best-selling author, speaking at, I think it was the Value Voters thing, and she's been very pro-Trump, very strongly in favor of nationalism and economic nationalism, and she got up there and she said, Who voted for all this free trade stuff? Who voted for this? And I thought, well, Laura, Newt Gingrich, Bob Dole, mm-hmm. John McCain, all the people you supported, mm-hmm. Laura, those are the people who supported this free trade thing. And I remember it seemed as though the year 2000 was kind of a watershed event in conservative talk radio. It became very shrill, very strongly pro-partisan, pro-Republican, pro-Trump pro-George Bush, and they couldn't say a bad word about George Bush. And I specifically remember Laura Ingraham gushing over Donald Rumsfeld. She called him Rummy, you know, Rummy this and Rummy that, and he used to be a Marine Corps pilot and all this crapola. And I'm thinking, oh, God. But at least she switched sides. She's with us now. And so Sean Hannity's another one. He supported Bush very strongly, and now he's come out against most of the ideas for which Bush stood. In the case of Sean Hannity, I think he has evolved. I think truly he has evolved in many of his views. And he's very, very strongly pro-nationalist. He's very strongly nationalist on immigration issues. He's always been a strong Trump supporter. And he's supported Julian Assange. Sean Hannity generally has supported the search for the truth. And I think that's a very good thing. I used to not like him at all. Mm-hmm. Used to detest him, actually. But I find that he's really, you know, the word evolving. I hate that word, but because people use it, you know. But he is evolving. I mean, what can I say? It's an appropriate word. He's changing, and he's changing in our direction. I think he was very young when he was shoved into the position at Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
And he was quite young. I think he was being groomed as a successor for Rush Limbaugh, because Limbaugh had some significant hearing loss as a result of the overprescription of painkillers derived from his bad back and, you know, for medicinal purposes, quite literally. And they were afraid he would not be able to continue forward. And apparently Hannity was picked, plucked from obscurity and thrust into the spotlight. And now he has made a place for himself in the spotlight. So I'm pretty favorably disposed toward Hannity. He is a source of good information. He has helped deflate a lot of the anti-white narratives, namely Ferguson, Missouri, and Trayvon Martin. Mm-hmm. And I think he's on the right side of the NFL thing. He's on the same side I am. So how can we go wrong with that, huh?
Yeah, I can understand people in the mainstream media, in Fox's mainstream media. I can understand them not being able to talk about Jewish power and not being able to call out Israel. But one thing that I've always found reprehensible about him is he just actively promotes Israel and promotes Zionism. At least Tucker Carlson pretty largely avoids the topic. On one of his recent shows, he actually he used Israel as a example of something, just of some hypothetical. I can't remember what it was, but it wasn't very favorable. I was surprised at that. And Tucker Carlson, somebody else who has, if you want to use the term, evolved. He has evolved quite a bit over the years. He would have your criticisms of Laura Ingraham probably would have been pretty much on the mark with Tucker Carlson as well. And Tucker Carlson is a good 7 years or so younger than Hannity. He's even younger, but he has moved even more in our direction. Now, there was one segment on one of his shows from a couple of days ago that I thought was interesting, and it's probably a can of worms, maybe something that we shouldn't really be opening up. But he was talking, he had a segment on illegal aliens coming into the United States and then getting taxpayer-funded abortions. And he had somebody coming on saying, of all the things, I mean, it's bad enough we're paying for their education or we're paying for their health care, but to be paying for their abortions. Now, of course, the way our law is currently interpreted, our citizenship law, if these aborted babies of the illegal alien mothers, they would be anchor babies. And so it was kind of odd that there was so much outrage and the idea seemed to be you have to force these illegal alien women who don't want to have babies in order. You have to force them to have an anchor baby that is then going to have American citizenship and be a anchor for not just the mother, but all sorts of other extended family to be here. I thought that was odd. And I do understand for people who look at abortion as an absolute, as like a moral absolute. Well, that's just, you know, something you have to accept. But if you don't see it as a moral absolute, it's like, well, why would that be the issue that you want to concentrate on?
Yeah, I remember the that abortion issue. I thought it was kind of strange. I don't know. It seems to be some of these people. I mean, I know it's a horrible subject, and a lot of people think of it as murder and all that. But you know, it's not in our interest for these illegal aliens to come here and have children. They compete with our own children. They diminish the prospects and the resources available for all American children, not just white American children. This is one of the weird. This is one of the really weird things about blacks. I mean, they, you know, Mexicans are going into their communities and shooting them on sight, murdering their kids, just, you know, beating them up in schools and all this kind of stuff. And they continue to support the Democratic Party's desire to import as many of these people as possible. It's just weird to see such pathologically self-destructive behavior. It's almost like the pathology of white self-hatred. In a certain sense, I've always found it very strange, and I know black people, black personalities who were involved here in Southern California in the anti-immigration movement, who felt the same way. They said this is insane, and one of them was an AM radio show on Sunday night dealing with immigration. His name was Terry Anderson. He has since passed away. He had cancer, and but I knew Terry. He was very active in the anti-immigration movement, as was Jesse Lee Peterson, Reverend Peterson. And he just says black people have this pathological hatred of whites and of America, and they think by destroying America and destroying white people, somehow they're going to improve their own prospects. And their
nothing
prospects
could be further from the truth.
Oh, Mexicans hate blacks. Asians? You think blacks think they're going to get fair treatment from Asians? Holy mackerel, Andy. Much of the of the fury of the Rodney King riots was black reaction against Korean Korean merchants, and right. You know, it's just insane. They're just insane. I mean, there's no other word for it.
Well, there is it. I mean, I don't mean to be mean, but is it insanity, or is it just simply lack of cognitive abilities? And I think to a large extent, it's the latter. There is also just like we have among our sociopathic politicians like Bill Clinton, you've got black politicians who have a very good, very nice position, and I guess Frederica Wilson might be one of them. They are going to toe the line. They've got a very nice personal position that they are not entitled to based on merit, and so they can toe the line. And they can be the you can have controlled opposition. Well, in this case, you've got controlled leadership of these communities, and in no way is it in the interest of the black community to destroy the white race. In no way is it in the interest of the black community to reproduce itself into a majority, or reproduce whites out of being a majority. Because what majority black country on earth, in what country do blacks have a decent way of life?
Well, I don't know of any successful black country. I don't know of any black country that isn't trying to export its people to the United States. Even Barack Obama's aunt, Andy Oyongo, she was one of the most famous illegal aliens in the United States before her death. She ran away from Kenya because allegedly it wasn't safe for her to live there. So, you know, you see history repeating itself. Blacks do everything they can to escape their own kind, escape their own community, so they can live around white people. So, you know, what do you do?
Right. Okay, well, we'll be back after the break.
The American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
And we are back. We are back. And we are making progress. I had Kevin McDonald on about a week ago, and that was the first thing I had asked him was, I remember him being on David Duke's show at the beginning of 2015 and almost being despondent. He just seemed hopeless. And so much has changed. And now, of course, he's very optimistic, and lots of us are optimistic. And, you know, you talk about the alt-right, however you want to define it. Did it have a play a prominent role in electing Donald Trump? Well, it certainly played a very prominent role in the election. And I remember Hillary's alt-right speech, where actually she quoted you, Don Advo, in that big speech, one of the few speeches that she made because she was so low energy towards the end. So we've got a lot of stuff going on. And you know, had Richard Spencer had a conference or made a speech in 2015, 3 years ago, nobody would have covered it. And now it's national news. So I think we have a tremendous opportunity. And I think people, a lot of people are moving in the right direction. What do you think, Don?
Well, we are moving in the right direction. We made an impact. We made a mark. And for Hillary Clinton to acknowledge us as she did, I don't think she listens to any of our shows, but some of the people around her do, and there's polling data, and there are all sorts of things. I had a conversation with a lawyer who's sympathetic to our movement, who told me that but for the support of Andrew Anglin and the Stormer website, he doesn't think Trump would have been elected. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's true or not. I hope it is. I hope we have some of the power attributed to us. But I think we frighten them. And, you know, you Google alt-right, or you go to YouTube and do a search on alt-right and check the new postings every day. And there are all these stories and all these, you know, these YouTube videos about how powerless we are, how futile we are, how pathetic we are, but at the same time, how if we are not stopped on the streets, we'll take over the world. So, you know, we have to keep pushing. We have to keep, we're framing the conversation. We're forcing them to respond to us. And we just have to keep pushing. We can't ever give up, because we're finally beginning to turn the tide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you look at Trump's election, and it was, he got in by the skin of his teeth. And to the extent that we were a positive influence, then we were a critical influence. And I do think that we're a positive influence. Okay, well, that seems to be the end of this show for this day and for this week. But we will be back again next week with more exciting episodes of...
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.